Hey cosmonauts, welcome to the Citizen Cosmos podcast. My name is Serge and I take care of the ecosystem for cyber, which is one of the projects built on Cosmos, along with my co-host Anna. Throughout the podcast, along with our guests, we will discuss the most vital parts of the Cosmos ecosystem, how they function under the hood. In the first episode, we will talk to Gavin from Figment Networks about governance, personal trust, and related decentralized environments.
Welcome, Gavin, to our first episode of the podcast.
Gavin is most known in the Cosmos community for all the big amount of work he does, including the recent creation of the governance working group, creating loads of helpful guides. And obviously, he's a trusted validator as well. So have I missed anything, Gavin?
I think that's good. There are like other things too. I think we have Staking Hub, a channel, like a Telegram channel that we do like AMAs. I mean, it's meant for discussion with people who are kind of professionals or very experienced with staking to talk about like staking environment. But a lot of the conversations are mostly come from the AMAs that we do. So a lot of new networks that are launching will host AMAs to like kind of get an early look at what staking will be like on their network.
Right, sounds good. Let's talk about probably what I presume most listeners would love to listen to, and that's the governance working group. How would you describe it yourself? I know you have already done that, and it's probably something everybody keeps asking you, but I will ask you to do it one more time, and maybe mention how you think it's helpful to all sorts of users in Cosmos.
Sure, yeah. I don't think it's very useful to users in Cosmos yet. It's still like a forming thing. I started out with this idea of having a group that would make governance work easier. And I didn't really know what that looked like. And the idea would just be to kind of kickstart it and then have kind of other people start to keep it going. But now I'm seeing it in a less formal way. I think it'll just be a group of people who pay attention to governance and do some more or less focused on governance work. So most of the activity takes place in calls. We're doing like a mid-month call and a end-of-month call. And largely the governance working group is focused on education and providing feedback for people who wish to make governance proposals. That ties into some of the other work that I did for the proposal that funded the governance working group. So I created some best practices and documentation for community spend proposals. Those are proposals that are specifically designed to spend money from a common pool of resources that accumulate on the Cosmos Hub. And then also I did the same thing for parameter change proposals. So those are specifically for changing how the Cosmos Hub functions without having to halt the software, just simply using a governance proposal. So with those like assets and hopefully other assets, the idea is that when people want to make a proposal to change something or to secure funding from the Cosmos Hub, we can kind of use those as a guide to provide feedback to ensure that people have made like high quality proposals so that they don't risk their atoms making a proposal that's maybe incomplete or controversial, at least controversial because of an absence of information or because of poor information. And then the idea is also so that people can, because it's hard to make these governance proposals, at least high quality ones. So the idea is to lower that barrier so that more people are able to access the resources of the community pool or to like make changes that benefit the Cosmos Hub as a whole.
You mentioned a couple of times that it's hard to make governance proposals. What would you say is the most difficult part for you in as a user or as a validator? I don't know, just anything that comes to your mind in a governance proposal or in a proposal in general.
So for me, the hardest thing was detailing a proposal in a way that answered any prospective questions that might come from the broader community in advance so that once it was launched, people wouldn't say, well, what about this or what about that? To make sure that I had covered everything, to make sure that all the information was there. Because once you launch a proposal, that's it. It's on chain and once it goes to the voting period, it's just a yes or no question, like, do we want this or not? And so you can't say, oh, I made a mistake, like, I need to update this proposal. I realized something because of a question somebody said or somebody asked. A lot of times these questions won't come up until the proposal is being voted on. So it's hard to maybe necessarily get that kind of engagement before the proposal goes up. So that leads me to my second challenge, which is engagement before a proposal goes up. For me, I think that was a lot easier because, like, I have relationships with a lot of the people, like a lot of the stakeholders in the hub. So people know who I am, so they're more inclined to maybe engage with me as well. So I imagine that to be the biggest problem probably for most people. So that's probably a problem I'd like to tackle next. How can people get attention of the biggest stakeholders so that they can make, so that their proposals can be more likely to be successful? Like, you know, if they're high quality proposals and if they will benefit the hub. But then also that introduces the problem for the stakeholders, for people like maybe with a lot of delegations or people with a lot of tokens, is that they might have a lot of proposals coming their way, like people asking off chain, hey, can you pay attention to this? Hey, can you pay attention to that? And eventually, you know, that they just might not want to be paying attention. Figuring out maybe a process for bridging that connection so that people can get the attention they deserve for their proposals. And so that's the other kind of another important part of the governance working group, is that having dedicated attention to people's proposals so that they, like, almost a pre-processing big stakeholders that, hey, this proposal has been reviewed and we think it's complete. So we think it's worthy of your attention now, because, you know, it's not going to be just like a patched together proposal. Like, it's gone through a process. There are best practices, and people have made lots of considerations and people have provided lots of feedback and stuff. So you should be able to get a quick understanding of what this proposal intends and whether or not you want to support it.
So it looks like personal communication is a significant part of what you're doing, actually.
Yeah, I think that even though with blockchain technology and decentralized technologies, the goal is trust minimalization and, like, automating things, I still see governance processes is very human and intensely political.
So that actually brings me to kind of a maybe weird question, but more of a personal weird question. Every time I see someone doing something, doesn't matter what it is, and I see that the person really enjoys doing it, I always ask the person, what are his personal reasons? Like, what is the insight that drove you to do that? I mean, let alone everything you explained about, you know, getting the proposals done right, getting everyone to see it, structuring it, communication. What drives you personally to do that and not something else?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. So there are, like, many layers to that, I think. Do you want them all? At the probably least connected to blockchain, like, layer of reasons, my motivation is a personal understanding of what it means to coordinate in a way that effectively considers all of the voices of the stakeholders involved. Like, I want to be better at that because I think it'll be important for my family, everything from a family to a community to, I guess, to a country, but I guess I'm not as interested on that kind of scale. I also think it's valuable off-chain because I think that these are really valuable experiments to understand how to coordinate and govern in a way that there's value at risk, because they're real assets with real value. But most of the people that have, like, I'm going to speculate that most people are speculating that they'll be valuable or useful in the future. The people that stand to lose from governance experimentation, I think, are the best positioned to lose, but I don't think that they want to lose. So I think they'll behave in a way that reflects a lot of the behaviors that we might see in the more human space. So it means we can run experiments that maybe will mirror the broader human governance space. But if we ran similar experiments in, like, more traditional way, the most vulnerable people would be at risk. I think that we can it's a great opportunity to experiment without putting vulnerable people at risk. And I think that we can take the things that we learn and we can apply them to the way that we govern outside of blockchain.
Yeah, that totally makes sense, because when I hear about governance and about blockchain at first, it's hard to connect often. And it's great to see that this is what drives you, because to me personally, it makes a lot of sense. And it kind of inputs trust into the person who's doing it, because I know that he's doing it for the same reasons that I feel that it should be done, if you know what I mean, if I'm making any sense here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I'm not sure if I wanted to ask that, but I will. Semi-controversial question, but I mean, obviously, you know, we have to ask something like that, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't be as interesting. When you did the proposal, there was some feedback that right now, it's not the way, talking about the governance working group here, obviously, right now, it's not the way that the community funds should be spent. Now, how did that make you feel? Did you feel that this is something like personally against you, or did you feel that maybe that feedback had some sense? I mean, generally, I think you get the question, right?
Yeah. Okay, so this is interesting. So the way that I thought and the way that I felt were two different things. The way that I feel is I feel like it's a personal attack against me, which I found fascinating because I know it's not. I think that your initial reaction is just kind of automatic, but I think that the way that you respond to that is really more who you are. I like to remind myself that, because I don't like, the thinking part of me doesn't like the way that I automatically respond to that. It feels threatening, it's scary, but I know that it's not personal. I know that people have good intentions with the things that they've written and the things that they're paying attention to. So I appreciate that sort of criticism, and I'm always looking for that because I think it's an opportunity to learn. Like, ideally, it's an opportunity for me to refine what I'm doing and to kind of as counter evidence to what I'm sure is right. So, like, I come from a science background, so it's kind of become a second nature for me to, when I'm certain about something, to start looking for counter evidence. Having critical feedback is really important. And I found some of the critical feedback important, and some of it I found to be maybe missing what it was that I was doing. Like, it almost seemed like, I think I was like very methodical with the way that I laid things out, but some of the critical feedback I got, I think, missed a lot of the points. So I tried to address where I could, but one of the challenges that I ran into is that with such public scrutiny, it's hard to answer everybody, and it's hard to read everything they've written. So it doesn't scale. So like trying to respond to feedback is like very challenging when there's a lot of it. Because I'm also responding to different kinds of feedback and in different ways. So some of it's very public and some of it is very private. And eventually it makes it really hard for me to actually do the work, because like my attention and time is wrapped up in that. I try to read through some things I have to read through really quickly and some things I just can't respond to. And one of the things that I didn't respond to is like broad criticism around, like, some people had suggested maybe only the people who need it most should get funding from the community pool. So I'm affiliated with a VC-backed validator operator. We have funding, and others are like running on like really thin margins. And so maybe we shouldn't be getting access to any of the funds there because we're much less in need of funding. And so, you know, that I respect that people have different values. And they think that it should be used for different things. And I don't know how it should be used. Like, I don't have a strong position in terms of like who's deserving and not deserving. I guess I haven't formed a strong position on that. But like, if I had to guess how the Cosmos Hub wants funds to be used, I would guess that they would want common funds to be used to provide valuable outputs for the hub. Just like thinking about where this fund, because this funding isn't just specifically minted for like into the community pool, it's being taxed. So it's taken off of any staking rewards. So the source of the funding is 2% of any of the staking rewards, whether that's block rewards, like inflationary block rewards, or whether that's, those are transaction fees. And for the most part, it's just inflationary block rewards at the moment. But in the code, it's called a tax. So, and the way that it behaves, I'd say primarily because of the transaction fees aspect to it. But anyway, that's another story. I think it's safe to call it a tax. If we're taxing, I think that those are the ones that are represented with those funds. How it should be used will be determined by how those votes are carried out, which makes sense because voting is proportional to the tokens that are being taxed or the tokens that are staked that are being taxed. One comes before the other. So I think the voting, maybe people can influence how people vote by saying, oh, this is how we should use it, by trying to establish norms or whatever. But I think ultimately people will vote, and then based on how they vote, that's how the funds should be used. I think it will see in retrospect. I don't know, like that's really long and convoluted answer. I think the Cosmos Hub should get something they value from the funds that have been taxed from their rewards. And they'll vote that way. And then we'll learn about what the Cosmos Hub values.
Makes sense. I mean, it's a good answer, I think. Not structured, but I like that because I think it's getting what you feel. That's what I wanted really to hear. I wanted to hear your thoughts rather than structured answer where you say 1, 2, 3. And it's much more interesting to me anyways, at least as somebody who was on both sides, to hear the back of what you're thinking. And it makes more sense to me, at least now. One thing you mentioned, and this is just curiosity. You said you have a scientific background. What's your background? This is interesting to hear.
Yeah, I have like 3/4 of a Bachelor of Science in Psych, Neuroscience, and Behavior.
But I was just saying 3/4 sounds good.
Yeah, I took a year off. Then that turned into 2, and probably now we're moving into 3 years off. So I'm taking a course right now, actually, just one course. At some point, I'll probably have to go back.
So, and why you personally decided to work with such kind of things? I mean, to work with a lot of people, it's kind of high pressure, and obviously you need to deal with a lot amount of information.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, those weren't... I kind of knew that those would be some of the challenges. Just at the periphery, I didn't want to be overwhelmed by all the potential of the challenges. So I kind of thought, well, I'll just take them as they come, because I thought that it's important work and I didn't see anybody else doing it. So I just thought, this is something I'm interested in and it seems like it's important, because the Cosmos Hub was essentially introduced with just this like rudimentary functionality. There was no like user manual for, other than like how to send a transaction or whatever to make a governance proposal. But other than that, there wasn't really any guidance from the creators. So I thought, well, there's an opportunity here to establish good practices early on and to legitimize that functionality, because the upgrades for the protocol before didn't really use, they were just kind of like handed to it from developers at AllInBits. We don't want this to be AllInBits network. We want it to be like the centralized network, and this is part of it. So while it'll be important to use the governance process to direct how those upgrades are done, and then that's part of legitimizing the governance process as well, there's a lot of work to be done here because there's no layer on, like just the function. There's no norms, nothing established. So I thought it would be good to do that early. The reason is because I think that this could be a really big weak point in the network. So, you know, everybody's done all this work to make this cryptographically secure and incentive mechanisms and all that to make these networks predictable. And we've seen that work with like Ethereum and Bitcoin for the most part. But I see this as like a giant hole, security hole in how the network operates. So anyway, I think on-chain governance has the potential to be a massive failure and disaster. And so I'm hoping to mitigate that. That's another driving force for engaging in this.
Looks like another challenge.
Yeah, definitely.
You said the Cosmos Hub was introduced with only a manual how to send a transaction. You mentioned Ether, you mentioned Bitcoin. And that was a couple of questions I had. I'll try to put them together. One thing is, how did you get into Cosmos? But straight away, I will add something to that, because we're friends. We follow each other on Twitter. And I see your Twitter handle says Ether Gavin. So I was just wondering, how did it all get together? Did you get into Ether first and then into... I mean, tell your crypto story.
I think it was in first year university, maybe 2015, maybe it's 2014. I think it might have been 2014. I came across videos on YouTube somehow. I have no idea how, but like I came across videos of Vitalik and Stephen Tuol talking about Ethereum, and it was like really fascinating and neat, and it was like kind of like something I couldn't get my head around. So I like, you know, got in touch with anyone I knew that had like computer science background, and was like, what do you think about this? And they were like, I have no idea what this is. And so it was just this, you know, these kind of quick little overviews of what like Ethereum proposes to do, but it was really a different paradigm. Like I didn't really understand how to get a grasp on it. So I watched these videos like over and over again, trying to understand what the hell they were talking about. First, I thought it was because I didn't have a technical background, but then I realized it was because it was like a kind of otherworldly thing, something that just really didn't exist yet in any other kind of form. I was really fascinated by it and I couldn't forget it. And anyway, they did a crowd sale and I was like, I don't want to have to get like Bitcoin to do it because it's such a pain in the ass. So I just waited, and then eventually I like bought a bunch from the market. And so anyway, I, you know, was just mostly a lurker. I didn't really contribute in any sort of way. I just kind of followed excitedly, like what's going to happen, like watching the technology develop, you know. And then when the prices started going crazy, it was kind of surprising how like when Ether was like $1.50 and now, and then all of a sudden it's like $100 or something, right? At some point it was $1,000. So seeing that was kind of surreal. I tried to avoid a lot of the ICOs and stuff. But then eventually I got sucked in because I was like, wow, it's like free more Ether because I can like buy them and then just sell it back and get more Ether. But like that was my main, like I really was into the base layer protocol. Like that was what I was most excited about. And some of the apps that were being built and that sort of thing, I was pretty excited about. So that was thrilling for me for a number of years. And then I put some Ether into the Cosmos fundraiser. Yeah, that took forever for Cosmos to launch. And I started to get interested in what Cosmos was doing, particularly because I went to EdCon 2017, I think it was. Maybe 2018? I think it was 2018. Anyway, I like met up with like Sunny and Adrian and Zaki. And at that time, I had like no involvement in Cosmos at all. And like, I kind of knew who they were a bit, just based on a little bit of the work. I started like kind of getting interested in the work they were doing. And then I wanted to know like how Cosmos worked. We chatted a bit about that, and it was a little tough for me to get my head around. I thought, oh, and I was interested in proof of stake because I wanted to stake. But then I was like, there's no way I can stake. Only the top 100 can stake. There's no way my pittance of what I put into that crowd sale will put me in a position to validate. So I kind of wrote that off. I didn't even really consider it. Once Cosmos launched, then I started to kind of get interested in like how it worked. I wrote an article about it. It was one of the first articles I wrote. That's when Figment Networks found me. I wrote this article about supply side staking because I wanted to learn about what these staking services were doing. And then I tweeted it out and I tagged some relevant people, and then they retweeted it, and then Figment Networks picked it up. And in the same day, they were asking to hire me. I was surprised by that. I wasn't really looking for a job, so I didn't say no, but I said, like, maybe I could do a little bit of work for you or something. I was planning to go back to school. So anyway, I did some work for them for maybe like 2 weeks. I really liked working with them. Like, it was a really good experience in ways that I hadn't had before. You know, and I have a young family. Like, we have an 11-month-old boy, and at that time we were pregnant. And anyway, I really liked that they're a family-friendly company. A lot of almost everybody has like young family. And Andrew, we had a scheduled call, and he missed the call because he had slept, like he had fallen asleep with his kid. Apparently that wasn't terribly uncommon for him then. When that happened, I thought, well, these guys are for real, you know, like they talked about being family friendly, but like combined with some of the things that they had told me, I was really made me believe that they were. So anyway, I loved working the work that I had started with them. And then I also loved that they were so flexible with family stuff, and they understood it and valued it. I asked for a full-time, I said, hey, is that full-time position still available? And they're like, yeah, of course. So it's been, in May, it'll be a year that I've been working full-time with Figment Networks. And I've spent a lot of that time working in Cosmo. I'm excited to keep going. I really like it.
You mentioned Figment networks a few times, and I kind of wanted to leave it to the end. I mean, it's the best place to ask about it. While talking about what Figment network do, and maybe you should mention why they run a validator if you fancy, and what's your role in Figment network as well?
It's really morph. I was writing content. First, I was like kind of understanding the networks that we support and may support at all different levels, and understanding what stakeholders want and bridging the connection. I was kind of like the eyes and the ears, because like a lot of people were like in Figment networks were focused on, they had a lot of things to pay attention to, and it's hard to keep up with like a shifting space and the community. And so I was kind of the eyes and the ears for the community, and then translating that into like useful stuff, I guess synthesizing that information into palatable content. And that evolved quite a bit. I mean, I kind of know the Figment story, but I'll probably screw it up, so I just don't want to represent it wrong.
Okay, well, why does Figment run a Cosmos validator? Let's go the easy way.
Our business is primarily staking. So we provide services for cross networks. It's not just Cosmos. But Cosmos was one of the first, you know, production-ready proof-of-stake networks. I don't know this well enough, probably, to represent it, why initially we started with Cosmos. Because I wasn't there. It was probably 6 months, or even more, that work, joining Cosmos, the Cosmos Hub, was probably 6 months prior to me being hired. But I know that the reason that we're there is a belief of end-user adoption. Figment supports networks that they basically believe will have end-user adoption, and try to drive that in any way that we can, which is like software development, infrastructure, and many other things. I don't know the company line. I don't know the, like, all of the things that we sell and all that kind of stuff. So like, I'm the worst person to represent Figment networks when it comes to that sort of thing. A lot of times I forget that we're running a business. I just get really involved in the in all the other stuff.
One thing I do want to ask is maybe your personal thoughts, and I'll try to structure the question. When I go on a Figment website, I see a huge amount of networks. I mean, usually validators don't do even like half of that. And my question is not the Figment story behind it, but what are your personal thoughts on a validator picking a chain that he should?
I don't have strong thoughts there. I guess it depends on what your goals are as a validator. I think for startups that are looking to make a business out of being a validator, I almost question whether or not being a validator itself is business worthy. I wonder if it's a way to be a pillar of support in a community that opens up new opportunities to differentiate, maybe to establish yourself as a validator, but then use that position to be able to provide other kinds of value to the network. And there are different approaches to that. I think there's the promiscuous approach, which is to like kind of get in bed with all potential chains, and then from there decide which ones are the most valuable to really focus on and invest your efforts in. And then there's the more selective approach, which is better for startups or organizations that have fewer resources, and maybe even better for some that do have more resources as well. That approach allows you to really become more of an expert on the ones that you're taking an earlier position on being an expert. Your resources are less divided. We seem to be a little bit more promiscuous because of the number of networks we support. That there's value there as well, because it allows us to compare across networks. It allows us to become experts in staking more generally. It challenges us to be experts more broadly and to learn about these networks in a very practical way, rather than just like reading docs and like deciding whether or not we want to support these networks. Even though we support many networks, there are many networks we don't support. So we're not, say we're fully promiscuous. We don't just like jump on any network. The networks that we're on, we have a reasonable degree of confidence that there's a chance of success for end user adoption. So these are the networks that we support. And my personal thoughts on that is that it's great. These are great learning opportunities. Every time there's a new network that we support, I get to learn more about proof of stake, and I get to learn, I get to contrast across different networks, and it kind of reveals things that may have just been assumed that I might not have been able to identify if somebody else hadn't provided that contrast with a different design. We do these AMAs, especially the networks that we are supporting or plan to support. We usually host an AMA, and that gives me the opportunity to really try to poke at the design choices, and that helps me to learn, but it also maybe helps the designers to consider things that they may not have considered, and then everybody learns together rather than just doing this as an internal process. You can see in our AMAs a way to see a little bit about what I think about all of these networks and what it is that we value about them.
Right.
Makes sense. You mentioned networks, a lot of networks, and obviously Cosmos being the blockchain that's supposed to, let me correct myself, that connects the blockchains together. Obviously, the IBC demo is up and running in a couple of days, and we've seen a few implementations. I mean, we did one from our team. I've seen Iris Network release something. And going back to governance, as somebody who's representing, apart from just a Cosmos user or a project that is Tendermint-based or Cosmos-based, whichever way you want to put it, a lot of the times I'm trying to think of interchain governance. And I would love to hear your thoughts on how do you see interchain governance, or maybe now it's not the time to think about it.
I haven't thought about it at all. It's definitely a curiosity of mine, but I haven't given it enough consideration to conceptualize what that may even look like. Do you have any thoughts about that? I don't know that you're asking the questions, but like, you know, now I'm curious.
Well, yes, I think that I don't want to go in too much into my own thoughts, because otherwise they'll be like, take the podcast the other way. But generally, I think that it is important. I think that even though we are still not even halfway with the governance on Cosmos Hub, and we're still figuring out like best practices with you helping a lot on that, we're still working with the governance group, trying to understand how to make the proposals and so on and so on. I think it may be a good idea to for the other networks to see where Cosmos Hub goes wrong or where it actually goes right, and try to implement those things and then understand how to scale it onto the idea of interchain governance. Generally, if we look at how projects in blockchain evolve, especially projects that run on other protocols, what we see is that first we have, for example, let's take Ethereum. And at the beginning, everybody had Ether. And then when other projects started on Ether, at first, the users who had Ether definitely had a share in those projects. And then as some of those projects got big, they started to have users who only had a share in those projects, but didn't have a share in Ether, if that makes any sense. And I think that Cosmos will probably somewhere be the same, repeat the story of even have the story on a bigger scale, because we have sovereign blockchains. Now, right now, probably each person who owns a share in a project that is Cosmos-based probably owns Atom. But at some point, we will get to the stage where people who own those shares don't necessarily own Atom. And this will be the place where we have to think, okay, so how do we put all those ideas together? How do we make the big governance, the big wheels turn? I think I agree with you. Maybe it's not the time to think about it, but I just wanted to hear what your thoughts there.
Yeah, thank you. So it's actually just something I hadn't thought, like I haven't considered. I've heard people talk about interchain governance, but like, I don't know. This is the most I've heard about it. I'm getting the impression that maybe interchain governance, back to see if I've got this right, is the idea that we've got the Cosmos Hub, ideally, like Cosmos Hub strives to be this like, the most credible hub in an ecosystem of independent blockchains. So the Cosmos Hub will kind of like the point in which values exchanged and information, like data is exchanged between these different zones. If the Cosmos Hub becomes dominant in that way, any of the participating zones, like let's say I've got like Kava tokens and I'm using the Kava blockchain, and that's relying on the Cosmos Hub to get assets from Terra, for example, for CDPs or whatever. They're for Kava's product, they need assets from other chains. And so now Kava depends on the Cosmos Hub for that. They're a stakeholder. How are they represented by the Cosmos Hub if Kava users don't have atoms. Is that kind of what the interchain governance problem would be here?
Yeah, well, I think that's part of it. And I think this is a good example where we see that there are so many questions and the answers are not even there yet. I'll give you an example. In cyber, we tried, and this is not really interchain governance, but it's kind of going that way, what we tried to do, because we started up a small validator on Cosmos, obviously. And then what we wanted to do is we wanted to get people from our own community to vote on the proposals as well. So the way we tried to do it is we tried to kind of an off-chain, we said to our community, how do you guys think we should vote on that proposal? So maybe you don't have Atom tokens, but technically you are in the Tendermint ecosystem because you're on cyber. So what do you guys think we should vote? I mean, we didn't really have a lot of feedback, which is a shame. Well, it was a test, you know, to see how that would work. This is what I mean. I don't know if it makes sense.
I think so. In cyber community, you're like looking for feedback about how cyber as whole entity positions themselves in governance decisions on Cosmos.
Yeah, exactly. Technically, they are still part of, and not just them, obviously, let's not talk about cyber here. I mean, every single project out there, whether it's Kava, Terra, Iris, Sentinel, whatever, Desmos, they are all part of this big ecosystem. And the more we grow, the more projects we see, right? I mean, if we go in Cosmonauts world, we see what, like 100 or something projects.
It occurred to me that it's in the Cosmos Hub's interest to consider, even if, let's say, cyber had no atoms and no formal vote in Cosmos Hub decisions, Cosmos atom holders should care what a zone like cyber thinks if they care about having cyber use the Cosmos Hub. Because, you know, cyber could pick a different hub as a way to communicate with other zones.
Right.
So I imagine that there will be like competition amongst hubs. There could be a way to formalize that, or there could be a process to consider what zones that use the Cosmos Hub think, or we intend to use the Cosmos Hub, think about decisions being made on the Cosmos Hub. To me, it could be interchain governance, even if it's not algorithmic or on-chain.
You mentioned centralization and the avoidance of centralization numerous times. I'm going to mention coronavirus here. I'll say why. During and after World War I or World War II, there was a lot of government interference into people's privacy and into businesses. And then it kind of, well, it didn't go away. It was supposed to go away, but it stayed. And the reason I'm mentioning this is, how do you see the avoidance of the governance working group and the governance in general of going somewhere shouldn't go in terms of centralization and trying to keep it as decentralized as possible, if that again makes any sense at all?
It's a good question. You've got your initial example, which is government powers post World War II. Governments like, we need these powers because there's this black swan event. We all need to kind of unify, and you need to let us make quick decisions and execute a lot of power that ordinarily there would be checks and balances for, and we need to kind of remove those to make these decisions, right? So that's kind of initially, that's what's going on with this like World War II event. And then we can see parallels. We see where all of a sudden governments need to make rapid decisions with a lot of power that impact on people heavily, but people are more likely to legitimize bypassing checks and balances because this is an extraordinary situation. It's a slippery slope because now these might be norms. We've set a precedent. People are used to it, or these ways of doing things are established and they work easier to do because it's a pain in the ass to move through checks and balances and to listen to different voices when you're just trying to get something done. The same thing can manifest in some governance working group, because this might be part of the reason that this sort of thing exists. Well, one of the main reasons this sort of thing exists is to make governance easier because it's hard to do. Also, that means we could default. This could set a social norm. Governance working group could become a powerful organization. It could be recognized as the only way to do governance. You don't get governance proposals passed unless you go through the governance working group. So it becomes almost like a power broker situation. Right now, I don't see any risk of that happening, mostly because it's mostly just me still. Like, there are lots of people joining calls, and there are lots of people interested. There's not a lot of actions taking place. Like, Zaki wants to Zaki wants to form a legal entity. He wants to do he has an actionable thing that he's working on that could be related to the governance working group. It's largely his endeavor. Right now, there's like no risk of that, I think. But like it's definitely, but in order to mitigate that risk, I think it's good to be aware of those power dynamics before kind of establishing these norms and be taking care to, if we recognize that these sorts of power dynamics are forming, to work to dismantle them in a responsible way. I shouldn't be the only one who's able to pass a governance proposal. I shouldn't be the only one who's able to help somebody else pass a governance proposal because I have established relationships with large token holders who, let's say they don't want to be paying attention all the time. They just default to like, does Gavin think this is a good idea? Yes or no. And then somebody's like, well, I need to get this governance proposal passed. Like, I obviously need to go through Gavin so he can tell big stakeholders, yeah, this is fine. You should vote for it. I am aware that the position that I'm in could lead to me being a power broker. People could pay me to try to get their proposals passed. And that's what, so this is something, these are things that I'm aware of that I'm working to dismantle or will be like mindful to the dismantle, but I'm probably a bigger risk in that sense than the governance working group. What I'm trying to do with the governance working group is I'm trying to decentralize the stuff that I've learned and the power that I've kind of accrued. I'm trying to disperse that to like other people and hopefully a diverse group of people who are, and to build capacity for those people to be able to do governance work effectively. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure, it makes sense. And moreover, you are very reflexive about this thing. Yeah, I mean, about being in a point of power and you realize that you could push some decision and people to make this decision. It's really cool that you can understand such type of things.
Yeah, I think it's really important. Until these networks are like worth governing, until there's something that makes them worth governing, people won't care. So I think that the first step is to like make them useful, make the network useful, and to be pragmatic and simple, take a simplistic approach, and then make sure that that approach provides room for growth for new stakeholders. As the network becomes more useful, we'll see new stakeholders with different preferences, and to be able to like make room for that growth so that whatever norms we establish, they're able to either change or develop with the network as the network develops. Hopefully the stuff that I'm doing now will also be useful, like let's say in 2 years or 3 years when there's all kinds of new stakeholders, if Cosmos fulfills its mission.
For a wrap-up, I just want to say, if they do start paying you, I won't tell anyone if you start sharing the money, so that's okay, that's normal. I'm kidding, obviously. It's been really great talking to you, and it's been really great hearing what's under the hood of the ideas that you have. And I think it'd be really awesome if more people hear this, the way that what I share, and I believe that I know a lot of other people who share what you've been saying, but sometimes it's not enough to, you know, you want to look under the hood and you don't have the possibility to do it. And this was the whole idea of this conversation, and I'm hoping that for future podcasts we'll have exactly the same thing with people where they are able to share what they really feel of to why they do something, as rather what they're doing. So yeah, and thank you for that.
Yeah, appreciate that. This in a trust minimalized environment, it seems to me like trust has never been more important.
Especially with blockchains, right?
Yeah, I think it's probably... So I think that this is a great theme. Like if this is, you know, if this is something you're considering as a theme for interviews for your podcast, I think it's a really great approach.
I hope so. Thanks again.
Thank you. It was really, really nice to speak to you.
Okay. And thanks to all the listeners. So we'll see you next time on next episode. Thanks.